Welcome to Scarlet Tavern. Grab a drink, take a seat, and let's begin. Imagine, it's the early 1980s. Big hair, neon colors, and synthesizers rule the world. But lurking in the suburban basements of America, a new phenomenon is brewing. A group of teenagers huddle around a table, rolling dice, casting spells, and battling imaginary dragons. On the surface, it looks like harmless fun. A bunch of friends playing a game called Dungeons and Dragons. But to some concerned parents, religious leaders, and media outlets, this wasn't just a game. Oh no. To them, it was a gateway to something much darker. Enter the era of the Satanic Panic, where a roll of the dice could be seen as a pact with the devil, a wizard spell could unleash real-life evil, and a game manual might as well have been the handbook for summoning demons. From strange accusations to outlandish claims, Dungeons & Dragons found itself at the epicenter of a cultural storm, accused of turning innocent teens into occult-obsessed devil worshippers. So grab your cloak and wizard hat, because we're about to embark on a quest through the wild world of D&D and the Satanic Panic, a saga filled with fear, fantasy, and one very misunderstood role-playing game. This is Scarlet Tavern. All right.
So, Cade, since this is D&D themed, and in the spirit of D&D, do I have time to go into the town and talk to the blacksmith?
No.
Damn.
You have time to blow up the guard shack.
Okay.
Or rob a level 20 wizard.
You're in no position to say
Not a wizard.
Oh, wait, warlock.
There's a warlock.
How many of our party have you killed?
One.
Two.
We don't count that one.
Yes, we do.
We better up those numbers a little bit. But yeah, this is our continuation of the Satanic Panic and the phenomena, how it spread. But now we're talking about all of our favorite games.
D&D.
And
this is hitting close to home for us. Something that obviously we love and the reason that we're here. We're going to talk. We'll go through the beginning and give a little brief history of D&D and how it started and all of that for those that don't know. But before we do that, I do have a clip that I would like to play. It's about a minute long. So here is a video of this is some religious show back in the 80s, like when color TV first hit, and they talk about this is the very first edition of D&D. This is like Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, AD&D. So here's this little 1 minute clip.
I do not think that many parents are aware of what's inside the game. In fact, in my presentation, I show many pictures from the inside the books just to show the images of this game. I mean, the gruesomeness of this game and the occult link to it. I know that when I did my message, and this has happened, I have letter after letter where people took the pieces. Now, there's sixes involved in the pieces of the game, but they take the pieces of the game. They would throw them in the incinerator or the fireplace, and screams would come out because there seemed to be some kind of spiritual forces inhabiting those pieces, and children would drop out of life. They didn't want to study anymore. What are the pieces, for instance?
Well, this game affects the most intelligent of our children, and the pieces include white witches, wizards, necromancers, the clerics, that type of thing. It includes evil wizards. It's a white versus black witchcraft. The good versus evil is white versus black witchcraft. And Anton LaVey, the writer of the Satanist Bible, says there is no such thing as white witchcraft.
Being a Satan worshiper, he should know.
Yeah, he should.
Yeah.
So I have two things about that clip. First off, what D&D game are these guys being introduced to? Because it sounds kind of boring. No offense. I think you and I, Kate, have created our own sessions that are far more interesting. And two, for a couple of, I'm assuming those are avid religious Christians.
Yeah. This was, if I remember, because I saw this clip a long time ago, this was one of those like shows that went on before like Benny Hill or Benny Hinn, I mean, went on before Benny Hinn. And so you would watch this and then Benny Hinn would come on and slap people into Christianity.
Yeah. So I find it, and again, this is just as someone who's probably the most Christian outside of our friend Ethan, in our little friend circle. I find it just so funny that they literally just said, they quoted, whatever priest of the, Satanic Church, Anton something?
Anton LaVey?
He's the founder of the Satanic Temple.
So they're quoting him. He's like, well, he would know. And it's like, okay, I was taught in Catholic school, we don't believe Satan, Prince of Lies. We especially don't believe their disciples. So why are you believing him? When he says, there's no good magic, it's only evil. It's like, I would think they'd be like, well, if he's saying there's no good magic, he's probably lying to us.
Yeah, and listen, as a lot of our group we practice magic.
Yeah.
And we don't practice black magic. I mean, yes, black magic does exist. It is there. It is banned. We firmly ban black magic. But white magic exists. There's so many different things. There's kitchen witches. There's garden witches. There's so many different things, and it's putting them on this little fine line because you hear the term witch and immediately we go back to fucking Salem and everybody gets burned at the fucking stake.
Actually, fun fact about Salem. And
most of them did not burn at the stake.
Yes.
Salem, none of them burned at the stake.
They just hanged them.
Yeah.
That still sucks.
There's only about 15% of witches in history actually burned at the stake.
And that was mainly, I want to say, was it Britain?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they're British.
Yeah. This is why I always laugh at the extreme religious groups of people. They're just like, for people that who talk all about the power of God, and it is what it is, but we're not going to get, I don't want to delve into a religious dogmatic debate, but for people who say, no, the word of God and the power of God and Jesus Christ is all powerful. I mean, they're talking about, oh, I threw a D&D book and spirits started
screaming. Oh no, not a book. Minifigs.
Oh God.
Our minis. They threw the minis in the fire and screams came out.
I know how much those are called.
Right, especially back then.
Yeah, but the whole thing is though that whole thing, and I don't mean to speak ill of our to other pagans, but that's a paganistic kind of thing, putting spirits into inanimate objects. That's not a Christian thing. Christians for the bon large don't really like. That's not a thing. But
if you look at big Pentecostal Christians, they believe that you can be possessed by demons. Well, a living
soul can be
possessed. No, they also believe that objects can be too.
Well, I'm not afraid to say they're wrong, because again, that is, to me,
I'm not saying they're right.
Yeah, to me that's wrong. That is something that sounds like it's very rooted in the folklore of their ancestors and they just refuse to give it up. So you can, like I said, not trying to get into a religious thing. I just find that very ironic. And unfortunately, these were the idiots who were speaking the loudest about D&D back then.
Yeah. So, again, the satanic panic in the 80s was a period of widespread fear and concern in the United States and other parts of the world, primarily driven by a belief that satanic rituals and influences were infiltrating popular culture. One of the primary targets of this panic was the tabletop role-playing game Dungeons & Dragons, or D&D. Launched in the 1970s, D&D quickly grew in popularity, but its themes of magic, fantasy, and mythical creatures led some religious and conservative groups to view the game as promoting occultism and demonic worship. These groups argued that the game could lead players, particularly young people, into dangerous and deviant behavior, including actual satanic practices. the panic gained further traction with high-profile cases where individuals who were who played D&D were involved in crimes or suicides. Although these cases were often complex and involved numerous factors, some media outlets and activists linked them directly to the influence of D&D. This connection was sensationalized in the media, further fueling public fear. Books like Mazes and Monsters. And what's funny is Mazes and Monsters, there's also, there's somebody created a D&D game called Mazes and Minotaurs to mimic that. And which I actually got. And reports by religious groups contributed to the perception that D&D was not just a game, but a gateway to dangerous, if not evil, behavior. This period saw parents, religious leaders, and community groups organizing efforts to ban or heavily restrict access to the game. Now, let's talk a little bit about D&D. Dungeons & Dragons, D&D, was the world's first and most popular tabletop role-playing game. It was created by Gary Gygax, rest in peace, and Dave Arneson, which I believe is dead as well, and first published in 1974 by TSR Incorporated. The game emerged from the creator's passion for miniature wargaming, where players would simulate battles with small figures. Gygax and Arneson expanded this concept by introducing individual character roles, imaginative storytelling, and rule systems that allowed players to create and embark on adventures and fantasy worlds. This innovation transformed a niche hobby into an entirely new genre of gaming where players could become wizards, warriors, and other characters within rich fictional universes.
Emphasis on the word fictional.
Fiction. D&D's early years saw rapid growth as it became a cultural phenomenon in the late 1970s and early 80s. The game's appeal lay in its blend of creativity, strategy, and social interaction, drawing in a diverse and dedicated fan base. However, D&D also faced significant backlash during this period, becoming a focal point of the moral and satanic panic of the 1980s. Critics accused the game of promoting occultism, violence, and deviant behavior, leading to widespread fear and controversy. Despite these challenges, D&D endured, and its popularity continued to grow, aided by the release of advanced editions and supplemental materials that expanded its complexity and depth. And then Wizards of the Coast took over and ruined it.
I mean,
what?
I could, like, if someone just walked in on us talking and describing, I'm going to kill this person by beheading it and blood spurting all over, I can see where some parents would be like, what the fuck did I just walk into?
I mean, yeah. I mean, there's definitely points if you don't understand what's happening. Like, if I do, if I were, as the GM, doing one of the villains of the campaign, I am going to enjoy impaling my hand through your chests, grabbing your hearts, and taking a bite while it's still bleeding.
Knowing my mother, if I had really a lot of friends in high school, if I did that, she heard me, she'd probably be like, what the? Although, yeah. Once I explained to her, she'd be like, oh yeah, I remember some of my friends played that in high school, and then walk away.
Yeah. I was not allowed to play this growing up. In the decades that followed, D&D experienced numerous transformations, including the release of several new editions, each refining and expanding the game's rules and settings. TSR struggled financially in the 1990s, leading to its acquisition by the evil corporation Wizards of the Coast in 1997.
Suffice it to say, we're never going to get a sponsorship from them.
No.
Yeah, I've already tried.
Listen, is that why they're an evil corporation?
No, they're just dicks. They're OGL shit. The reason we created our own system. Which, thank you, Wizards of the Coast, for doing that so we could create our own system.
I mean, look at, all of us had our campaign 2 characters pretty much.
They were done for 5e.
Yeah,
and then 5e. They did this whole OGL open gaming license thing and would have taken a majority of the money that we made off of it. And so we created our own system, Magi Mysterium, available for purchase on our website.
Bad enough the government taxes me, and I'll be damned if all the Wizards of the Coast do the same thing to me.
I'm a sovereign citizen.
No, I'm not that crazy. Jesus.
The release of the third edition in 2000, which is the first edition I played, followed by the highly successful fifth edition. Oh, yeah. We don't talk about fourth edition. Fourth edition was in 2014 helped to cement D&D's place in modern pop culture. Today, Dungeons & Dragons enjoys a resurgence in popularity driven by online streaming, podcasts, which every Wednesday at 8 a.m. on Spotify, Dungeons & Magi, and a shameless plug, and a growing recognition of the game's positive impacts on creativity, teamwork, and social engagement. And before I continue, I post this on my personal TikTok. You can see it, Cade Freeman VO. I kind of talked about why I got into voice acting in D&D and what I liked about it. And we talk about the creativity, teamwork, and social engagement. In the world of D&D, black and white don't exist.
No.
You see these big macho men like Travis Willingham, or the Big Show, who all play D&D, and then you see nerdy people that sit there, like Ben, who sit there and play D&D.
Ben is our resident nerd.
Yes, he's if you've watched our campaign too, he's the inspiration for Stu.
Just wait.
Tales of Acanthia.
Just fun fact.
Yeah, just wait. Just wait. There's some of our one-shot series will hopefully be coming soon that I will be DMing. Just wait.
You do remember that a DM is the worst player, right?
Because
I can make you hate being a DM.
Are you sure you want to be our DM with a bunch of murder hobos?
Considering some of the games that I want to DM are very much encouraging action and violence. Sure, why not?
But yeah, so Gary Gygax, born Ernest Gary Gygax on July 27, 1938 in Chicago, Illinois, was an American game designer best known as the co-creator of D&D.
I didn't know his name was Ernie.
Yep, Ernest Gary Gygax, the first and most influential TTRPG. Gygax grew up with a passion for games and fantasy literature, and he develops an early interest in wargaming, a hobby that involved recreating historical battles with miniature figures, which that eventually led into games like Warhammer. But back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, it was historical stuff that they were doing. Especially once World War II stopped, they were releasing figures of Nazis and stuff like that, so you can wargame with them.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, it led to Warhammer, which then led to D&D. and this interest would later form the foundation for his groundbreaking work in the gaming industry. In the early 1970s, Gygax, along with fellow game enthusiast Dave Arneson, began developing a new type of game that combined the strategy of war games with the storytelling and character development of fantasy fiction. The result was Dungeons & Dragons, first published in 1974 by TSR Incorporated, a company Gygax co-founded. D&D introduced players to a new form of interactive storytelling, where they could assume the roles of characters in a fantastical world and embark on adventures guided by a dungeon master. The game quickly became a cultural phenomenon, revolutionizing the gaming industry and laying the groundwork for the role-playing game genre. Gygax continued to contribute to the development of D&D and other games throughout his career, but he faced challenges, including internal conflicts at TSR, that led to his departure from the company in 1985. Despite the setbacks, Gygax remained an influential figure in the gaming community, creating new games and writing fantasy novels. His work earned him a dedicated following, and he is often referred to as the father of role-playing games. Gygax's legacy lives on through the enduring popularity of Dungeons & Dragons, which has inspired countless other games, books, movies, and creative works. He passed away on March 4th, 2008, but his impact on gaming and popular culture remains profound and far-reaching. And at that point, usually around the time of his death, is when the GaryCon happens. Oh, yeah. So you can go to Wisconsin, and which is where he did end up passing away. That's where he left Chicago and moved to Wisconsin.
Which happens a lot.
Yeah. And he ended up, that's where he created D&D. That's the birthplace of D&D.
So Dave Arneson passed away a year later on April 7th, 2009.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But yeah, you can go to GaryCon, which actually his son started. And a huge convention. We'll go to it one year.
I would love to.
We've been invited. We got invited this year. We just weren't able to go. But we'll be doing that. But it's really cool. It's an honor of him, and because we wouldn't be here without him.
I'm sad that I never got into D&D or even tabletop role playing games when I was younger. I felt like I would have probably had.
You'd have had friends.
Actually, no. I think part of the reason why I never got into it is because I knew about it and I was kind of intrigued, but the D&D club in my school, which was a Catholic school, funny enough, I didn't like any of the guys in there. I thought that they were, like, I've always considered myself a nerd, but they were, like, weird nerds. Like, they were, like, I don't know how to explain it. It was just, if you knew them, everyone I knew, I was like, you know what? You guys are weird. And not in a good way, where you're like eccentric and nice. You're just weird, sullen, depressed. And it's like, you know what? Only one of them was like that. The other ones were just like moody. Two of them, I'm pretty sure, I was convinced were one day going to start shooting the school up. But I just was like, you know what? I don't want to deal with you guys. Bye.
Which, speaking of, our thoughts are with everybody in Georgia.
Yes.
This, if you have not heard, 3 days ago, there was a school shooting in Georgia. 14-year-old kid brought a rifle to school, killed 4, 2 students, 2 teachers. The students were 14 years old and injured 9 others. Unlucky for him, the school just the week before had started this new program where teachers had badges that had alert buttons on them. The second they saw anything, they hit the button, which is why he was able to be taken down so quickly, because it maps out the school and alerts police to right where they are.
Oh.
So he is in custody. He gave up. He is, FBI announced yesterday that he is being tried as an adult for 4 counts of felony murder. So there's still some news coming out about that. Still trying to figure out how he got the gun and all that, but the parents aren't speaking to the press yet.
And so, hopefully he will be executed because Georgia has a death penalty.
They do. So, and the FBI is adamant about this. So. But our thoughts are with everybody in Georgia, those families affected and all of that. So, but yeah.
So now we'll get into some of the early controversies of D&D.
Yes. So James Dallas Egbert III was, I mean, I just want to make fun of him just because of his name.
Egbert.
He sounds like a nerd. Was a highly intelligent but troubled 16-year-old student at Michigan State University. That's his other issue.
Yeah.
Who became 100%. The center of a media frenzy in 1979 after his mysterious disappearance. Egbert was a prodigy, enrolled in college at an exceptionally young age, but he struggled with the pressures of academic life, personal issues, and mental health challenges. His disappearance was initially linked to his involvement in the TTRPG Dungeons & Dragons, sparking widespread speculation and contributing to the moral panic surrounding the game. The case became emblematic of the fears and misunderstandings surrounding D&D and its supposed influence on young minds during the late 70s and early 80s. Now, he was born not too far from us in Dayton, Ohio.
Another shitty place, sorry.
And grew up in the suburb of Huber Heights.
Another shitty place. I actually just worked. Yeah. For my day job, where I was just in both of those today.
He attended Wayne High School, which is still there. A child prodigy, Egbert entered Michigan State University at the age of 16, where he pursued a major in computer science. Reports surrounding his later suicide attempt and disappearance cite a range of personal struggles, including depression, loneliness, parental pressure, drug addiction, and, as noted by the private detective who was later hired to search for him, difficulties in coming to terms with his homosexuality.
Okay, I'm sorry. If you have a child that is a child prodigy that's going to college really early, I don't agree sending them away to a different state.
My opinion, child prodigies, like, oh, your son can skip a grade and go to college early.
They I'd be like, burn out. So, like,
no, I would say no.
Yeah. Well, the thing was, is Michigan State University, for especially back then, for the sciences,
was really good.
One of the best schools in the country.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure.
Still to this day, it is.
I'm sure it is, but as I'm sure you guys will agree with me, school doesn't just teach you, you know, like, education. It teaches you other stuff, well, social social skills.
Coming
and stuff.
From someone who at kindergarten, first grade was already reading like 2 to 3 grade levels above where I should have been, it's hard because then all that pressure, the teachers expect you not to stutter on your words, to know every single thing in the book and all of that. So it's like reading and all of that just becomes a chore. It's not fun anymore.
Oh, I'm sure. But in this case, I think, as we're going to see, he probably would have been better off just going through high school normally than going to college.
Yeah. On August 15th, 1979, James Dallas Egbert III left his dormitory room at Case Hall, Michigan State University, after writing a suicide note. He then entered the university's steam tunnels, where he attempted to end his life by consuming methaqualone. However, the suicide attempt failed, and he awoke the next day, eventually seeking refuge at a friend's house. Coincidentally, on the same day, Gen Con 12. Man.
That's really...
Yeah. Gen Con just had their, like, 40th anniversary, the one that I went to.
Yeah, this is really okay, early one, because it was in Wisconsin.
Methaqualone is a hypnotic sedative.
Yeah.
That's a weird one to try and kill yourself with. You'd be tripping balls before you die.
So again, Gen Con, a tabletop role playing game convention, began in Wisconsin, now in Indianapolis, for the past 10 years, and they just signed another 5-year contract with them. So it'll be in Indianapolis again, which we will hopefully be there next year. So and some attendees reported sightings of Egbert there. Meanwhile, a police search for Egbert was initiated. By August 22nd, Egbert's parents had hired William Deere, a private investigator who was familiar with Egbert's uncle, to assist in locating their son. During their initial conversation, Egbert's mother expressed concerns that her son might have committed suicide and criticized Michigan State University for not informing them of his disappearance until August 20th. 5 days after he was last seen. Here's the issue, though. That's not their job.
No, especially if you're in
you're in college. This isn't high school.
Yeah.
You're in college. I mean, if you don't show up to classes, you fail. It's yeah. it.
Yeah, even if you're a minor, it's like...
It doesn't matter. You're yeah. in college.
Yeah.
On August 24th, Michael Stewart, a journalist for the university's newspaper, The State News, published an article detailing Egbert's case. The article included information from an anonymous friend who claimed that Egbert was known to leave campus for undisclosed destinations. This revelation sparked increasing media interest in Egbert's disappearance. As Deere delved into the investigation, he discovered that Egbert had played Dungeons and Dragons. This led to the public amplification of police theories linking Egbert's disappearance to the game. There were rumors that students played live-action sessions of D&D in the steam tunnels beneath the campus, and it was speculated that Egbert might have entered the tunnels only to become injured or lost. First of all,
that sounds like
I want to do a live-action D&D in steam tunnels.
I'm good.
That sounds like fun. Mm.
The
live-action D&D section.
It's
session?
LARPing.
Oh, that's not the end part. In steam tunnels, eh.
It's LARPing, which there is a LARP group around here, by the way. The alleged connection between the role-playing game and Egbert's disappearance resulted in sensationalist media coverage, with some outlets portraying Dungeons & Dragons as a bizarre and secretive cult that could only be joined by invitation. Number one, yes, it can only be joined by invitation. because I don't want a shit bag at my table.
What the fuck are you looking at me for?
Despite an extensive search, Egbert remained missing for several weeks. During this time, he moved between two other houses in East Lansing before eventually leaving the city bus for New Orleans. While in New Orleans, Egbert made a second suicide attempt by ingesting a cyanide compound, but this attempt also failed. Like, dude, you suck at everything. You can't even kill yourself the right way.
I wonder if he just was continuously rolling natural ones.
I mean, no, he'd be rolling natural 20s. Yeah. He's rolling his death saves, man.
Yeah.
He then traveled to Morgan City, Louisiana, where he found work as a laborer in an oil field. After only 4 days on the job, Egbert, aware that William Deere was actively searching for him, contacted the investigator and disclosed his location. Deere traveled to Louisiana, though some reports mention Texas, and located Egbert. Upon their meeting, Egbert requested that Deere keep the details of his whereabouts and experiences over the past weeks confidential. Deere agreed, and Egbert, still legally a juvenile, was released into the custody of his uncle, Marvin Gross, on September 13, 1979.
So the way it also sounds is that this poor kid, A, is a child prodigy, probably is burnt the fuck out, and there's so much pressure from probably his parents being like, hey, you're a child prodigy, you need to be doing great, you need to be getting straight A's, and all of that. He's probably like, you know what, fuck it, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
In 1980, William Deere, the private investigator who had found James Dallas Egbert III, declined to comment on the case to journalists. However, in 1984, he published a book titled The Dungeon Master, The Disappearance of James Dallas Egbert III, in which he detailed the story of Egbert's disappearance and the surrounding events. The book was published in hardcover by Houghton Mifflin and later in paperback by Random House in 1985. The idea that Dungeons & Dragons players might act out real-life sessions in dangerous settings such as steam tunnels and lose their grip on reality become a widely accepted notion in popular culture. This concept inspired various books and movies, most notably Mazes and Monsters. The perceived link between Egbert's disappearance and D&D contributed to the growing controversy surrounding the game during the 1980s. The release of Mazes and Monsters as both a novel and a film further heightened public anxiety about role-playing games. Ironically, while the controversy cast a shadow over D&D, it also significantly boosted the game's popularity. Publicity around the game led to a dramatic increase in sales of D&D game manuals. For instance, sales of the D&D basic set surged. Before the steam tunnel incident, the basic set sold around 5,000 copies per month, but by the end of 1979, monthly sales had skyrocketed to over 30,000 copies, continuing to rise thereafter. This unexpected boost in sales contributed to the long-term success and cultural impact of D&D.
It had to be all those kids that wanted to perform witchcraft and devil's work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All those rebels.
Yeah. In 1981, Rona Jaffe published Mazes and Monsters, a novel inspired by James Dallas Egbert III's case. The book's plot mirrors the sensationalized aspects of Egbert's disappearance, focusing on the dangers of role-playing games. The novel was quickly adapted into a made-for-television movie in 1982, starring Tom Hanks.
His first movie role.
Yes. Further cementing the connection between role-playing games like D&D and the perceived risks they posed. And I'm pretty sure at some point, I read something, I'm pretty sure Tom Hanks played D&D at some point in his life. The influence of Egbert's story continued in popular culture. In 1983, the Canadian film Skullduggery, good movie, it's pretty good. Depicted a role-playing game similar to D&D as a tool of the devil used to transform a young man into a serial killer. This portrayal played into the fears of the time, reinforcing the idea that these games could have dangerous, even demonic consequences. In 1984, author Neal Stephenson satirized the university life in his novel, The Big U, which included a series of incidents eerily similar to the Egbert case. In the book, a live-action fantasy role player dies in a steam tunnel accident, directly referencing the urban myths and fears that had grown out of the Egbert incident. These cultural depictions contributed to the moral panic surrounding role-playing games in the 80s, even as they highlighted the absurdity and dangers of such misplaced fears. The tragic story of James Dallas Egbert III ultimately highlights the complexities of mental health, the pressures faced by gifted young individuals, and the dangers of misplaced blame. While his disappearance and subsequent death were initially sensationalized as being linked to D&D, it became clear over time that his struggles were deeply personal and far more nuanced than the media and public initially believed. Egbert's case served as a catalyst for the moral panic surrounding D&D, but also underscored the importance of understanding and addressing the real issues of mental illness, isolation, and the challenges faced by young people in high-pressure environments. His story remains a sobering reminder of the consequences of misattribution and the need for compassion and support in addressing mental health issues.
And that is a tragedy that a couple of years, even after everything, he finally did successfully, unfortunately, take his own life. And
yep.
That is the tragedy of it all. This is a very troubled young man who probably just needed some acceptance, and he probably never got it. And unfortunately, he thought suicide was his only way out, which it never is, by the way.
Yes.
But as we're going to see, this is a very recurring thing. The police or other people just don't understand D&D, and they keep linking this. I believe when I was researching this, the East Lansing police, like the actual real police, not the campus college police, when they went into his room, they saw that Egbert was, there's debate of how obsessed he was, but he definitely did have some early D&D memorabilia, and the cops, not understanding what it was, started like, oh, what's this? Is this all this? And the media just grabbed it and went with it.
Yeah.
yeah, now we're going into someone who's equal parts hilarious and also, again, fairly tragic.
Patricia Poling's son, Irving Poling, kill myself just for that name, was a high school student who tragically took his own life on June 9th, 1982. Irving shot himself in the chest, an act that devastated his family and left his mother searching for answers in all the wrong places. Irving had been an intelligent and imaginative teenager who became actively involved in role-playing games, particularly D&D. In the aftermath of his death, Patricia Poling became convinced that Irving's suicide was directly linked to his participation in D&D. Poling believed that a specific event within the game had triggered her son's death. Well, he failed his death saves. According to her, could you imagine if D&D was like Jumanji?
Well, that would actually be terrifying. It wasn't, in a way, Jumanji was kind of like
D&D. It was. It just brought it to life. Jesus. Like, oh, I cast Fireball. A fireball hits you.
Actually I read something online that what was it? I had to rewatch the clip of Jumanji, but when they're kids in the Robin Williams' character, when he's a kid in the 60s, he's getting sucked into the board game. He actually, just as he's getting sucked, he tries to tell his female friend what to do. She needs to roll the dice, but he's sucked into the board game before he can complete his sentence, and she, of course, is attacked by bats and does what any other sane person does, run away screaming.
Yeah.
Because I sure as shit would run away from bats. Like that.
I'm not going to lie, that scene...
Mm-hmm. Scared the hell out of you?
Yes. I was like 4 or 5 years old when it came out. And
how old were you, Ben, when it came out?
I don't want to talk about it.
Unfortunately, I was, as a kid, I was scared of literally everything.
As a kid?
I wasn't going to say it.
But you were thinking it.
And in a house that had bats. That scene, I screamed blue bloody murder until my bio parents turned the TV off.
And American bats are cute and cuddly.
I did not sleep for like a couple days because I was so traumatized that bats were just going to swoop in. And
I'm Batman. So,
Keaton.
According to her, Irving had been subjected to a curse placed on his D&D character by the game's dungeon master, his high school principal, Robert A. Bracey III, shortly before his death. Kudos to the school principal for being the DM for them.
Of course. Yeah.
Convinced that this curse played a role in her son's suicide, Pulling filed a wrongful death lawsuit against Bracey, holding him responsible for what she claimed was the negative influence of the game. She also filed a lawsuit against TSR Incorporated, again, the company that published D&D, alleging the game itself was dangerous and contributed to her son's death.
Yeah, probably ignoring over the fact that she probably didn't take notice of her son's declining mental state.
Yeah.
And how many times have you cursed us in D&D?
A lot. Driven by her grief and a desire to prevent other families from experiencing similar tragedies, Pulling founded the organization Bothered About Dungeons and Dragons, or BAD. This is like MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
I really feel
big
like
in the 90s.
Yeah. Every time I heard Bother, when I heard the song that Bothered, I couldn't help but think of Potter Friends. Bother.
So, BAD became a focal point in the broader campaign against role-playing games during the 1980s. Her activism included public appearances such as her participation in a 1985 episode of 60 Minutes, where she debated the game's creator, Gary Gygax.
I gotta find that video.
I can probably find it. Pulling efforts through BAD were instrumental in spreading the belief that D&D and other role-playing games could have harmful effects despite a lack of scientific evidence to support these claims. If I do find that episode, we will post it on our newly found Facebook page.
Oh, yeah.
You can find us on Facebook at Scarlet Tavern. You can find our page on there. That's where you'll see the topics that are coming up, some hints and stuff like that.
We'll try and find some good photos of the instances as well.
Yeah. So in 1983, after the dismissal of all her lawsuits, Patricia Pulling founded, again, the public advocacy group Bothered About Dungeons and Dragons, or BAD. The organization was dedicated to spreading Pulling's belief that D&D was a dangerous game that encouraged devil worship, suicide, and other harmful behaviors. BAD described D&D as a fantasy role-playing game which uses demonology, witchcraft, voodoo, murder, rape, blasphemy, suicide, assassination, insanity, sex, perversion, homosexuality, prostitution, satanic-type rituals, gambling, barbarism, cannibalism, sadism, desecration, demon summoning, necromantics, divination, and other teachings.
Jesus Christ, it does all that, huh?
I mean, listen, I will say it doesn't do rape.
Or suicide.
Depending on your character. Remember, we had Stu committed suicide, technically.
Well, that's self-sacrifice.
To save you guys. It's still technically suicide. He took his own life. And, I mean, there are satanic rituals in it. But everything else, it's in there. There's homosexuality in D&D a lot, and it's great. We welcome it. I try and flirt with Ben all the time.
Please, I really wish you would stop doing that.
In Tales of Acanthia, my character is gay.
Yeah. So, a lot of and there is prostitution. Ask Elliot. Okay, so, but other than that, like and if you do find a game that has rape and all of that in it, you need to find another table because
seriously, that should never be a thing in that, the TTRPGs.
And I'll tell people that don't know D&D and typically, so like what I do before we start a new campaign is I give everybody a checklist and everybody fills out this checklist of stuff that they're not comfortable with, stuff that they might be comfortable with in certain aspects, stuff that they're perfectly fine with. Are they fine with full out sex scenes, or do they want what we call fade to black, where two characters get together and we just assume what happens, that kind of stuff. So and you're going to find 90% of DMs do that. I did it when I was DMing at Gen Con last year. I did it. So, that was a 3-hour session.
In our first campaign, we had the one where you're like, everybody's hearing this, but it wasn't in detail or anything.
Yeah. So
I also feel like most DMs are just sensible enough to not do that in general, because who, I mean, I will also say though, there to our listeners, be wary. There are some DMs out there, DMs, GMs, however you want to call them, that use D&D and TTRPGs as a vehicle for their own
sick and depraved fantasies.
Yeah, I remember one time before we started everything, I actually looked at like other D&D groups before we all started this, and one was this guy wanted at least 3 females in his party of 5, and I was like, yeah. Why do you need at least 3? Okay. Yep. I told you, and you were like, yeah, that guy's just playing out of fantasy.
Exactly. So Bad gained some traction in the media, particularly within conservative Christian circles, no surprise there, but also in mainstream outlets. The organization's materials were distributed in Australia through conservative advocacy groups affiliated with Reverend Fred Nile, such as the Australian Federation for Decency.
I feel like living in Australia...
Do they have decency in Australia?
Well, I also feel like living in Australia is almost like living in real-life LARPing, because, you know, with all the
giant fucking spiders...
And other dangerous
snakes creatures. Coming up your toilet.
Yeah.
No. I feel like living in Australia would just be like living out D&D in real life.
It is.
Fuck off. Why?
In it's not our fault. It's what they do. It's what happens
in Australia.
That's what happens when you live in a penal colony.
Suffice it to say, we're not visiting Australia anytime soon.
Ever.
Sorry, for anybody that wants a live show in Australia, go fuck yourself.
We will go to New Zealand.
Yeah, I'll go to New Zealand
first. We actually have some audience members in Australia. I feel like we just lost them now just by that statement.
Listen, New Zealand and Australia are the same place.
Now we lost both countries.
If you didn't want to kill you in Australia, then it would be a great place to visit. But everything wants to fucking kill you.
We'll go LARP in Australia.
The goal is to get more viewers, not drive them away.
In her quest to combat, do they even have radios and stuff to listen to us in Australia?
Actually, yes, they do.
It's when they get their yard time in prison.
Mm-hmm.
In her quest to combat what she saw as the dangers of D&D, Pulling obtained a private investigator's license and became a consultant to law enforcement, positioning herself as an expert witness in several gaming-related lawsuits, although all these cases ultimately lost in court. She also became a director of the National Coalition on TV Violence in 1984. In August 1989, Pulling co-authored a book titled The Devil's Web, Who is Stalking Your Children for Satan? You need to see if we can find that. Which aimed to expose what she believed was a widespread satanic influence preying on the youth through games like D&D. The book made no distinction between H.P. Lovecraft's fictional Necronomicon and the Simon Necronomicon, a modern text claiming to be a real occult guide.
Ugh.
In one section, the book suggested that police officers began interrogations of suspected teenage occultists by asking, "Have you read the Necronomicon, or are you familiar with it?" Yes, I love H.P. Lovecraft.
I do, too. And first of all, I've tried reading bits of the Necronomicon.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know what H.P. Lovecraft was on, but he should have lowered his dosage.
On a lot of stuff.
He should have lowered his dosage of it. Because
pretty sure he did LSD.
Actually, no. He was around. He died before LSD ever became a thing.
That we know of. We don't know.
No, as we saw. As we saw in our episode on LSD, and
I may have found it.
You found LSD?
Book.
The book.
Oh, I needed you to pet.
Can we have some?
LSD, as we found in our MK Ultra episodes, LSD did not come into existence until the late 40s, early 50s, and H.P. Lovecraft died in the early 30s.
As Dungeons & Dragons and other role-playing games grew in popularity, Pulling's views and statements were increasingly scrutinized and questioned. For instance, she once claimed in an interview that 8% of the population in Richmond, Virginia were Satanists, a figure she calculated by adding her estimates of 4% of adults and 4% of teenagers involved in Satanism. When a reporter pointed out that mathematically this would still only account for 4%, not 8%, Pooling dismissed the error, insisting that even the 8% figure was a conservative estimate. She's an idiot.
She doesn't know
basic math.
I was about to say, it's like I just imagine that interview.
Even Pam can do that math.
Fuck off.
This incident highlighted the lack of rigor in her claims and contributed to the growing skepticism surrounding Bad's assertions.
You're on the couch tonight.
Despite her efforts, Poling's crusade against Dungeons and Dragons and role-playing games increasingly lost credibility as more people questioned the validity of her claims. However, her campaign, I love that they're saying campaign, remains a notable example of the moral panic that surrounded role-playing games in the 1980s. Let's be honest, she was role-playing too, like somebody who knew what she was doing.
Yeah.
In 1989, game player and designer Michael A. Stackpole responded to Patricia Poling's claims by writing Game Hysteria and the Truth. In this work, Stackpole meticulously deconstructed Poling's arguments against RPGs like D&D. He highlighted numerous flaws, misconceptions, inaccuracies, and omissions in her assertions. Stackpole also criticized her questionable practices, such as including newspaper articles in her documents without permission, which he pointed out was illegal due to copyright issues. Stackpole's analysis concluded that the suicide rates among gamers were actually a fraction of those among their non-gaming peers, contradicting Poling's claims that RPGs were linked to higher rates of suicide. In 1990, Stackpole further reiterated his points in the Poling Report, a detailed critique of Bad's methods of data collection, analysis, and reporting. He exposed how Poling had misinterpreted her qualification, or had misrepresented her qualifications and provided misleading information in her campaigns. Following the publication of the Poling Report, Poling faced increasing scrutiny, and she eventually stepped down from her role at BAD. And by 1991, several reputable organizations, including the American Association of Suicidology, the U.S. Center for Disease Control, and Health and Welfare Canada, had conducted their own investigations and analyses. These institutions independently concluded there was no causal link between fantasy gaming and suicide. The findings helped to discredit the panic surrounding RPGs that had been fueled by Poling's activism. And the moral panic began to wane as the gaming community and broader public gained a better understanding of these games.
And then Patricia Poling actually passed away of cancer in 1997.
She deserves it.
Honest to God, I can't help but wonder. I don't support or believe or anything with her. She was wrong 100% in her beliefs and her actions she carried out. But I really do view her as a tragic figure, because I can't help but wonder if a lot of this was fueled by the guilt of just not being able to see the signs that her son was suffering and helping him. I mean, again, like I said, it's wrong. D&D did not cause her son's death. It would probably cause her son's death with him not getting the help that he needed, and her and her husband probably not, you know, noticing the signs. But then again, unfortunately, back then, parents didn't always know to look for that. Patricia Poling was probably raised in a time when families were just always supposed to be happy and everything was great, and she probably just didn't really know how to deal with a depressed, obviously suicidal son. And let's face it, grief makes people do really strange, dumb things. So do I like that she tried to destroy the game that I love and that I'm trying to build my future retirement off of? No, I don't. Not one bit. But I do feel sorry for her, and I hope that she at least made peace with herself before she died.
And then before we continue on to our final thoughts, with what happened in these stories, I just want to make a little statement that if you or someone you know is struggling with thoughts of suicide, please remember that help is available. You don't have to face this alone. Reach out to someone you trust or contact the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988 for immediate support. Trained professionals are available 24/7 to listen and provide the help you need. Your life matters, and there are people who care about you and want to help. Don't hesitate to take that first step towards reaching out. And that 988, you can call or you can text it if you don't want to talk on the phone. Please, please do that. As someone who has battled with depression and suicidal thoughts, I know it. I've been there. Please reach out to somebody. You're not alone, and it doesn't have to end that way.
Yes.
And for me, personally, D&D was my escape. I've talked about this before. I don't think I've talked about it actually on here. But I, as you guys know, I come from law enforcement and military. I do have, at one point, it was crippling PTSD and depression. And I got into a really dark place. I wanted to end it all. I wanted to be done. I did not care. I thought nobody cared about me, all of that stuff. And I had planned to end it. I had a bottle of pills and a bottle of alcohol, and I was getting ready to down them both. And I thought to myself, you know what? If I'm going to die today, I'm going to watch something. I'm going to go out with the TV on. So I turned on my PlayStation, turned on the TV, and went on YouTube and started looking for something to do. And on my main page was Critical Role. And for those that don't know, Critical Role are a bunch of voice actors that play D&D. They live stream it on Twitch. And they're on their third campaign. Amazing stuff. And I watched that. It's a 4-hour episode. I was like, okay, I'll watch it for 4 hours. And then 4 hours turned into another 4 hours, then another. And then eventually I started looking up, okay, who are these people? And I started looking up their stories and Matt Mercer's stories and what he deals with and all of their mental health issues and things like that. And I immediately thought, well, if they can survive their mental health issues and play this game and do this and become voice actors and all that, why can't I? So I went and dumped the pills and dumped the alcohol and haven't touched pain pills since. And so I credit not just Critical Role, but D&D as a whole into saving my life, which is why it's such a passion for me and why Critical Role is so important into my life. And the reason I became a voice actor. And so, the thought of it being a detriment to people is ridiculous. I think for just about all of us, not only D&D, but video games as a whole are an escape. The things that we've seen, the things that we've dealt with, it's nice to, for me, especially as the GM, to build a world. I'm building a world that is so different from anything that is around us. And I'm giving my players a chance to climb inside my mind, as scary as that is sometimes, and to explore this world I've created. And 9 times out of 10, you're going to find that your players love it. They love this world. There's surprises in there. I DM a lot different than most people do. I don't write stuff beforehand. I make it up as I go because I just work better that way. And so I surprise myself with some of this stuff. But getting to escape and play something that you can never be, whether it's good or bad, whether you play a murderous hobo because you can't do it in real life as much as you want to, you can't do it in real life without consequences, but, or you play, you have dealt with some things in your life, some dark things, you've had things happen to you, and you choose to join D&D and be a healer to prevent stuff from happening to people. And it kind of just coincides with that. It is a way for us to deal with what we've dealt in the real world. Sometimes that does go to the extreme in unfortunate cases with some DMs. But for us, luckily, almost all of us have a pretty good ability to kind of set the bar and block that out. Sometimes I will, with my players, have to kind of adjust them and correct them, like, hey, this is a little too much. We need to make sure we're doing this. And ours is a little bit different because we do put on a show. Mm-hmm. So we're actors at this point. And, but saying that D&D and TTRPGs cause suicides and killings. And listen, I've been playing D&D now for 20 years and I haven't illegally killed anybody, killed people in the course of work, but I haven't illegally killed anybody. I haven't done human sacrifices and worshiped the devil and all of that. It's just, to me, it's absolutely ridiculous. Unfortunately, I think we're seeing it's funny what we're seeing now. We're seeing a bit of a resurgence of the satanic panic to a little bit of that, but we're also seeing such a surge of D&D thanks to Critical Role and Dimension 20 and the D&D movie and all of that stuff. We're seeing a real resurgence of both. So I think within the next 10 years, we're going to see this big battle of the satanic panic in D&D and what's going to happen, because we still unfortunately have the shit fucking bags that deserve to go to hell, like the Westboro Baptist Church.
Well, they deserve to go to hell for a lot of other reasons besides hating D&D.
Listen, if you are a member of Westboro Baptist Church, come here so I can slit your... Never mind.
You can't say that online.
See there, Sugar Bear.
I hate them.
Everyone hates them.
I know somebody personally that killed themselves because of Westboro Baptist Church. Because they were told that God hates fags and all of that stuff, that literally have a sign. They walk around with signs, and I hate the word fag. It's derogatory, but their sign literally says God hates fags.
Well, not in England. It's not a derogatory term.
No, it's a cigarette, but over here it is.
I know.
But so, and I... Again, I'm saying that word not as the derogatory, but to explain what Westboro Baptist Church does. But with places like that still existing, Westboro Baptist Church, these hardcore, holier-than-thou, Bible-thumping Christians, thinking that this stuff is still legit. I know personally people that hate D&D. People in my family hate that I do it, because it's seen as evil and all of this, but, I think we're going to see a bit of a resurgence of this. I don't think to the extreme as we did in the 80s.
Even in the 80s, just from researching this, it seemed like the people who were hyping it up the most were the media, just for what we would call now clickbait. I mean, realistically, unfortunately, people did take this seriously just from anecdotal stories I've read. But realistically, this never really got anywhere other than maybe a couple of interesting 60-minute episodes. And once anybody with 2 cents started analyzing it, they were like, yeah, this is all bullshit. It's just a dumb game that people play in their imaginations. Football's better. That's kind of what everybody's attitude. That's what mainstream America really thought of it. They're like, it's a game for kids. Just can we move on to something else? That was everyone's attitude once the media started delving a little bit into it. Even today, it's the few people that I've heard that tried to speak out against D&D, it's people who try to do the same thing that Patricia Pulling and these other old advocacy groups tried, and it didn't work back then, and it's definitely not working today. Also, fun fact, Gary Gygax was a devout Christian. Yes, his favorite Bible quote was from Matthew 5, chapter 5, verse 15 through 16. I have no idea what it is. But yeah. But so that is our first, that is our third part of our delve into the Satanic Panic.
And please, 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 if you are feeling suicidal or any thoughts of harming yourself, please reach out to someone you know, someone you can trust. There's the suicide hotline. Again, it's 988. So please, please just reach out.
And Matthew 5:15 is basically be a light so that all who see you can see God's good works or something like that.
Oh, that's not the worst quote.
Yeah. So but yeah, and that is basically it. What I'm gonna do is, I actually found, we'll be posting some clips on like D&D stuff, the Satanic Panic, because I found clips of one of the 60 Minutes specials in 1985 talking about D&D. And how Christians should renounce D&D and all of that stuff. So we'll be posting that on our Facebook and stuff. And you can go to that Facebook, and if you want certain topics, you can suggest those topics on there. We will get to it at some point. We do have a list of stuff.
Or you can go email us at scarlet.tavern.podcast@gmail.com.
Or info@scarlettavern.net, if that one's a little easier. But yeah, so we want to thank everybody for listening. Thank you for visiting the Scarlet Tavern. Remember to turn in your glasses, push in your seat, and as always, tip the bard. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
So a mountain, a curious mountain, we placed the burden on who could climb. As we ascended,